All right, hi, this is Eric here at SEO Book, and today we're going to be talking all things local search with a couple of local search experts from firegang.com, Jacob Poole and Adam Zilko. Welcome to SEO Book, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so we've got a lot of questions to get through here, so I'm going to jump right in. They're actually members here in the SEO Book forums. If anybody who's listening to this who's a member has probably been, amazed at some of the information that they give out. Definitely experts at this, so we're happy to have them on and get some answers to some of the questions that you folks have been asking. So I think we'll start with probably a broader question that a lot of people have questions about. Typically, is how do you running a local SEO campaign, the first part obviously is how do you go about conducting your initial keyword research for a new site or an existing site? As we know, volume and information tends to be sparse. Do you have specific tools you use? Do you look at competing sites? How do you do that?
I can take that, sure. So what we do is we try to, if we don't have the data already, of course, we assess competitive sites. We base keywords around services. So if you're like let's say an attorney practicing in personal injury, then you have certain things that you would focus on: car accidents, workers' compensation to a degree, or wrongful death, or things of that effect. And so what we do is we build keywords around those service areas. Same thing with dentists, emergency dentistry, endodontics, root canals, list goes on basically. And then we also have an in-depth intake form that all of our clients are required to fill out when we bring them on. So essentially what they do is they go through and they kind of give us all the services that they offer, and then they tell us kind of how they would search for them. And that kind of gives us a base for us to then start doing some research with. And then basically from the services that they mentioned, we can assess variations. And if we need to, we can look at large markets and try to assess backlink profiles, basically based on their anchor text profiling and so on. And then also try to look at their sites to see, how they laid them out, if they've done it right, and see what key phrases that they've kind of built their page copy around and their URL structure around and so on.
Yeah, and carrying on with that, we also look at usually clients have Google Analytics already installed. So if they give us access to that, we can kind of pull the past year and see what kind of long tail traffic that they've just happened to pick up. So that's kind of a good, gives us a good indication there. And then regarding keyword volume, that's an interesting one. Obviously, the best way and the most accurate way is to run a pay-per-click campaign. And we've run so many pay-per-click campaigns in different cities that we kind of have an idea based on population and based on business sector, how much volume there is out there. So for example, you'll take Cincinnati as an example, and there's about 1.7 million people here. And we know that a roofer, the roofing industry, there's about 30,000 searches there. I know that just from past experience, for example, dry cleaners, there's about 5,000 searches. So you kind of use that to gauge and then extrapolate on that based on population size. So, and you're making assumptions here, but let's say there's something, a town that's smaller than that, like half that size, then you can assume that there's half that volume. The other thing is looking at impressions for Google Places. So we'll take a look at different clients in different industries. For example, a population 2 million, we may have about 1,000 to 1,500 impressions on a fairly high-ranking dentist, for example. So those are kind of ways to really gauge different markets and then take population to create ratios and extrapolate there.
Interesting. Yeah, so you did mention PPC in there a little bit. I wanted to piggyback on that. Do you find that PPC is A, is it crucial for keyword research, or is it more important on a new site versus an old site, or does your model of sort of having this data about core industries based on your experience outweigh that a little bit, or do you find that maybe clients aren't willing to spend that money up front for PPC, or how does that usually work?
I'll take that. So PPC isn't terribly important to this whole process. We have a lot of experience knowing what are a good idea as to what services that clients will typically try to focus on. For your main headings, your dentists, your attorneys, and so on. So we kind of have a good feel as to what people typically search for when it comes to those. But again, we just try to focus everything back around those main services that the clients are offered. And with those, you would just section those out. And so PPC really isn't going to tell you a whole lot about anything more than what you should already kind of have a good idea of. And then so when we have our core keywords, for instance, let's say it was cosmetic dentistry in a given market, geographical market. What we can do is we can write out page copy and whatnot and try to build a backlink profile with diversity in those keywords, but we don't need a pay-per-click to tell us that people look for cosmetic dentistry if that's something that the client does, because there's only going to be so many variations to a decent degree of that. Teeth whitening, maybe Zoom, Invisalign, things to that effect, if they offer those services. And if they don't, then obviously you're not going to go after that. And then so that just directly ties into your anchor text, and we try to basically internally link our backlink profiles and our anchor text to those pages that are actually built around those specific keywords, if that makes sense. Tell me if it doesn't.
No, it does. So you've got, say, for instance, the core keywords sort of don't change from, market to market. It's just obviously it's the geographical targeting. So it's not so much the volume. I mean, the volume is going to be what it's going to be. You're more interested in finding out what's actually relevant to the business and going from there, because you can't change, the volume, but you can make sure at least the campaign is as targeted as possible.
Right, and we'll still take their main services and run them through like Google's keyword tools or other tools that we have, and we'll check other. I mean, depending on which market, some markets might type in like dentist plus city, and then other markets might more heavily type in the city plus dentist, and so we take that into effect. But typically, it's not the variation isn't so much that we don't have a good base to start with, if that makes sense.
Right. Yep.
I would add to that too. I mean, sometimes we can comb through some of the long tail in pay-per-click and have some basically just see some insights that we hadn't seen before. For example, with a dentist, we found that people were actually searching by insurance type, so we found those to be really fruitful keywords for us. A lot of times, just brand names. Let's say you have an interior designer, interior decorator. We find through pay-per-click that they would search brand names. So each industry, it does have some long tail out there that's easily discoverable through pay-per-click. However, the business owner, 9 times out of 10, can tell you those right off the bat.
Right. So it's more of interviewing a little bit too, rather than just going right for the keyword tool.
Right.
All right. The other so after you get into the keyword research and you look at the different things, obviously a big thing that you must deal with, or you have to deal with now, is localization, specifically with maps. We get a lot of questions on ranking in maps, how that differs from ranking in the traditional SERPs, if in some cases you can even tell the difference anymore, right? So what would you say the key differences between the two when you're looking at your organic campaign versus your maps campaign?
Right. So, and I'd like to preface this. We do have national clients. We have several of them, and so we do have some, real life examples as to the differences between the two. But with the maps, there's far more variations that you have to deal with. Organically, you can link build. And assuming that you do it right, you'll see a steady increase in results. But with the maps, you've got to worry about rogue citations, dealing with Google's terms of service when optimizing your proximity results. So, recently Google was showing like maybe just a downtown of a city versus the entire city. So, let's say you had an attorney that was just outside the downtown radius, they wouldn't show up anymore. So, how do you deal with that? And again, there's no manual. Google doesn't say that, hey, we've come out and just changed these. You'll just wake up one day and the maps listings will be completely different. And so the main difference really is the ongoing management of your citations. You just got to try to watch it and watch it and watch it. And when something changes, really hope that you already kind of understand it. And if not, then you really got to network or just do a ton of research or get on the Google Places forums. And really try to figure out what's going on and see if you can make some sort of an effect. If Google goes to, let's say, a blended pack versus a 7-pack, everything completely changes. And so then, you attack that differently. And again, it's just a little bit more difficult to manage because of all the different variations you're now dealing with. And there's not as much data out there as to how to handle these variations. So, and Google can change things at any minute. We just saw them change a bunch of things over the last 2 weeks, and nobody saw it coming. It's just trying to kind of be a little reactive to it and try to make heads or tails of it so you can effectively get your clients to rank within those.
And do you find some?
No worries. I would add, too, one thing we found is if there is confusion with your name, address, phone number, any confusion whatsoever, really, it's going to act as a complete weight on your listing and traffic, long tail and maps traffic. So the number one thing is to get all of your data exactly the same across the board. Otherwise, you're going to be completely held down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do see that a lot, especially with people who are trying to do campaigns with different phone number tracking, where they try to they put different phone numbers in Yelp and all these different places. Do you have anything? Do you use a specific type of call tracking application?
No, we completely recommend against it. Absolutely, 100% against it. Anytime you have any variations with your NAP, your name, address, and phone number, you're gonna, like Jake said, you're gonna weigh down your citation. Way down your listing, way down your trust with Google, and that's been the big thing. We've seen, even without any sort of other off-page efforts, just by cleaning up your citations across the web, we've seen significant increase in rankings many, many, many times because of that. And if you ever, now and again, you come across, let's say, a seven-pack with dentists, and you see one that maybe doesn't have a website in a very competitive market, it's typically because his citations are so dialed in. He's been in one place for 30 years, and the only data out there is exactly the same. And so there's a lot of trust within that. The same kind of rules apply. But we completely recommend that you never use a tracking number. And if you have to use one on your site, you put it in the form of like an image file.
Right,
and
right.
We'll even go as far as to make the alt text on it, or the alt tag, excuse me, their actual phone number. I mean, just no room for any confusion at all.
Right, yeah, you must run into that if you do PPC campaigns and stuff on landing pages. You could, no-index them or things like that, or block
right.
them. Yeah.
Yeah, the service we've used is If By Phone, and it seemed to work really well.
Yep.
But truth be told, it's just it was such a headache that it was not worth it.
Yeah, the traffic segments, sometimes they don't make a lot of sense to even start segmenting it out by phone number. You're just looking to try to get as many leads as you can, and then the campaigns aren't that much different. You should be able to tell where stuff is coming from, on your analytics and things like that, different goals and all that.
Also, I would mention too, if you don't use a tracking number, it kind of incentivizes you as an agency and as their partner to really keep good communication up with them.
Yep.
So we're constantly calling our customers and asking them how their phone calls are doing.
Right.
But it's kind of a forced way of to keep communication.
Yep. Yeah, clients do like that, that's for sure. Speaking of, you were talking about, keeping up on maps and changes and things like that. What type of rank tracking applications do you use to check your organic rankings in conjunction with map inserts and things like that?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, and there hasn't been a ton of really good tools up to date. So we've tried almost everything. However, we haven't tried this one yet, but apparently Linda at Catalyst Marketing has come up with a tool called Places Scout, which we're hearing really good things about. But we actually track everything at this point manually. So we have an employee go in and change her location to whatever location the city's in, and literally manually check it. And it actually works really, really well for us, because we're able to just see, kind of get a good idea of what the map looks like, if there's been any changes. Nothing replaces the human eye. So we do about four to five keywords per client and keep track that way. Now, on the other hand, we keep track of very long tail keywords through Advanced Web Ranker.
Okay, yep. Yeah, that's a very popular app here at SEO Book. I know, and sometimes too, I've noticed, but between using Advanced Web Ranking, but more so I use Raven Tools, but when they have the blended results, those actually show up. I don't know if they've changed the code, like the coding of the server, the coding of the servers, or how they're doing it. But when it goes blended, it actually shows as an organic ranking in a rank tracker rather than if it's a map insert. So it's very, you're right. It almost, you're almost better off having somebody hand check it because you don't know if you're looking at, you know, is this number two ranking a blended map insert? Is it an organic ranking, or am I not ranking, or am I ranking number two, but there's a 10-pack right above me and I don't know it?
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, all right. We'll link to that tool in the summary here. I'll have to check that out. I haven't heard of that one yet.
The place to scout, actually, I have played personally with it, and it seems to work pretty well. We do have some of our team testing it at this point to just make sure that it works to what we need it to. But it does allow us to track blended versus 7-pack versus other variations to a good degree. So we're not 100% with it yet, but we're working towards it. If it can pan out, then we'll certainly bring it on board.
Great. That's a great tip. When you take on a client, what are the two or three processes that you see which are often most neglected inside of a local SEO campaign?
Yeah, so taking on a client and onboarding them is actually interesting. I would say first off, not many small businesses out there right now are hiring folks to do a traditional campaign or to actually handle it day to day. So in that case, you just have the business owner or somebody in marketing that's trying to handle it, kind of a do-it-yourself. And in those situations, I mean, almost everything's neglected, which is good for a company like us because we can come in and clean things up pretty quickly. So that's the first thing, is you don't really see those situations where there's a lot running. The biggest thing is definitely incorrect citations and incorrect data, for sure. So that would be a matter of going to the data sources, Axiom, Localease, InfoUSA, and getting that data correct. And then I would say, for my opinion, one of the biggest pieces that are neglected is the actual website. The actual website being set up to convert. And that means a big phone number, big call to action, big contact form everywhere on the site. We don't really see a ton of clients paying attention to that. And we found by just implementing that change, they'll see an immediate increase in leads coming in.
Awesome. Yeah, you're right. When I do searches, well, first of all, it's hard enough to find a local business that even has a website sometimes, right? I mean, and then you run into that issue too, where you get on the site and you don't know what to do. It's hard to find contact information. Those are good points.
I would also add too, Eric, a lot of the technical stuff is improperly managed. A lot of times there's no webmaster tools, there's no KML sitemaps, there's no sitemap at all, rich snippets, geo modifiers in the title tags. I mean, all of that from A to Z is usually neglected. And then one last thing is, a lot of times people will try to take a shortcut. A lot of whether it be a bulk submission to UBL.org or something like that, and that may work sometimes, but oftentimes it takes a very manual contacting of every one of these directories, which we see these business owners just don't have time to take care of.
All right. Yeah, they you're right. It is a lot of people do just do those mass submissions and then just sort of let it go and they don't really follow up on it. And if what you're seeing there, like you said, there's a lot of value in having correct data all over the place, and you can't really substitute, quality handcrafted work for the bulk stuff.
Right.
And you're right, they certainly don't have time to do that. Another question that we get pretty often is, how do you deal with potential duplicate content issues when you're dealing with someone like a dentist who serves four or five different towns? Do you get into the multiple site type thing, multiple pages? How do you handle that?
Well, okay, so typically most small businesses don't have the budget for multiple websites to be placed for areas that are kind of a, say you're in a metropolitan area that has several sub areas that you operate in. It really kind of comes down to if you actually have a business address in these other locations or not, if you just operate around and in those areas. So it's really going to kind of determine how we go after that. And what I mean is that if you service people in a large geographical area, you can't necessarily get a Google Places listing in that area unless you have an address. So in that case, all we can do is try to get you to your site to rank organically, but we typically can't get you to show up in the Google map because, again, you don't have an address there. So what we'll try to do is if the areas are very close in proximity, we'll try to merge those kind of into like one page of content on your site, depending on what it is. If it's a subsection, let's say it's you're a dentist and you offer IV sedation, then we might put up a URL that says, you know, IV sedation in town A and town Z or whatever it is. However, if it's really a little bit further spaced out, or, you know, you really need to differentiate it out because of competition or whatever, we may actually build out like, you know, town X dentistry and town Y dentistry. And so there are two separate pages on the site. And then, you know, we attack that. And typically in that case, that dentist only still has that one address. So we'll keep that consistent across the board. But when we link build, we'll try to incorporate those keywords to the appropriate sub pages so we can get those to rank appropriately. And then typically, you know, that doesn't have any effect really on their map listing for the outside area, the other city that they don't exist in. And then when you get to the copy, we try to mention all the cities that they serve, you know, and just kind of work for, you know, work all of your keywords to make sure that all your geomodifiers are consistent for all the areas that you serve, as long as it makes sense. I mean, if they're serving, you know, national areas, then obviously that wouldn't work. You'd have to create a bunch of subsites, microsites, and approach that differently.
All right, great. I think that that covers a lot of the questions we had on campaign stuff. A lot of the second part here is we do get a lot of questions on the business side of things. People want to start, you know, building a local SEO business and then sort of grow it out from there. It's where people usually have most of their personal contacts. It's a great way to get started, and it certainly Google's pushing local all over the place, so it's definitely not a bad place to be. I think the first question that we would like to ask on that is, how do you go about marketing your services and picking up new customers?
Oh yeah, so this is the question we get all the time, kind of like the holy grail question, right?
Yep.
So the small business or the SMB market, the way I see it, it's notoriously hard to penetrate. I mean, if you have a busy attorney, they're not typically on their phone calling out asking for help for these things, right? So there's two ways to get to them. You know, one is kind of the traditional way, which is to cold call them, and that's very, very difficult. However, there's been many companies that are successful doing that. The Reach Locals and the Yodels of the world are scaling out pretty wide doing that type of sales. You can maybe pull up the old Yellow Pages and see who's got the biggest ads, and those folks are typically spending the most money, so that would be a good place to start. However, we don't do that. That's kind of the shotgun approach, and for a smaller agency, we find more success with a rifle approach, which would be personal relationships, networking, establishing yourself in the different communities as an authority. One way to do that is to kind of identify these connectors in this industry. You know, who are in these businesses' offices every day? So if you want to target attorneys, who's in their offices every day? If you want to target whoever, restaurants, who's talking to these guys? And a lot of times that will be kind of a secret golden source are actually Yellow Page reps or old Yellow Page reps, because those guys and gals have relationships with so many business owners. I mean, very, very personal relationships. Same thing with radio reps, radio ad reps, TV reps, even to the point, let's say, dental insurance, or a lot of these companies will have, a lot of these dentists will have people coming in selling them software. Well, those individuals have contacts with all the dentists in the entire city. So if you can get your hands on those folks, the connectors in the small business world, they will no doubt have people you can talk to.
Right, and you can also do things speaking, you know, being active in the business community. I mean, most small, you know, business communities have a chamber of commerce and things like that. Do you do speaking engagements there locally, some presentations, stuff like that?
Absolutely. That's probably the second biggest way. So personal contacts and then speaking at a chamber. Business owners are thirsting for this information.
Yes.
So most chambers, and another good one is better than chambers are actual industry specific organizations. Because you can go and speak to all the storage owners, storage facility owners in your city if you can get a hold of their organization that they're in.
Right. All right. So now we've got all these customers with all those great tips.
Just phone ringing off the
Yeah,
hook.
phone ringing off the hook, papers flying everywhere. How do you what do you see as for new folks getting into this as they start to build up a client base? What do you see as the biggest struggles for them?
Okay, so the first thing is not cutting corners. It's so easy to take the path of least resistance, but when you do, then your results kind of falter, if you will. The big thing is that you got to stay diligent and doing what works and doing it 100% of the time, and just being really consistent with it all across the board. And then, building scalable systems, it's difficult, but it can be done, and it's something that you certainly want to focus on, is how can you put practices in place to keep yourself organized and but also be able to replicate those systems across 10, 20, 50, 100 clients, so that everything gets done the right way every time, and nothing falls through the cracks. And then the last big thing that is huge is finding a way to justify yourself when compared to 50 other people that claim to do what you do. I mean, these business owners have people beating on their door all the time. So what is it that makes you any better than the rest of them? And coming up with that is something that's can be a little difficult. But once you find it, then it's now you have a reason to talk to them that really kind of sets yourself apart.
And to add on that, communication with these guys is really, really big. These business owners are so used to just they've been ripped off a lot in their past by companies calling them from all over the country, promising the next best thing. But if you can position yourself as their partner and keep a constant communication going with them, and somehow scale your business out at the same time, which is the whole conundrum, but that will do wonders for client retention, and the business owner will hire you. I mean, for us, for example, we have contracts, but our contracts end, and at that point, it's the business owner's. It's their decision to keep on going with us. So we want to create that really high touch environment where we're contacting them all the time, and that leads to a very, very high retention rate.
Another item that I would say is crucial for someone getting into this is really try to understand how local works, not just local SEO, but like the local market. We don't know it all. We just try to pay really close attention. We read, we test. We're always trying to learn what's going on. And then we spend a lot of time in, for instance, like the Google Places forums, helping and learning. Constantly, providing insights anywhere we can, and getting feedback from it. I mean, there's no industry guide put out by Google, so you have to either find someone who can help show you the way, which really doesn't exist in this area. I mean, very few people do it and are willing to share it, or you have to make your own path and kind of figure it out as you go. And the latter takes time, but it can work as long as you're diligent. And like Jake said, these business owners get beat on by hundreds of calls all the time. I mean, they're just inundated with it, and then emails and other solicitations. So you can't be one of those guys that let's say uses tools to email blast them, or just constantly are banging on their door with the same thing that everybody else is saying. I mean, there really are no shortcuts, and these guys just start to turn it off because now we're just looked at is another solicitation phone call, if you will, and then taking that to the next step. Not all businesses are right for local and internet marketing, and so you have to be able to prove your worth and justify your value, and that's very difficult to do with businesses that don't focus on services where clients call them or email them. So for an example, it's extremely difficult to show a direct return on investment with a restaurant. I mean, how are you going to effectively track results? How if they say, "Well, what did you do for me?" What can you prove to them other than, "Hey, we increased the traffic to your website"? How can you show that they actually got any business from it? Because nobody's answering their phone; they just get foot traffic. I mean, some restaurants, of course, may take reservations or get some calls, but again, it's very difficult to track. The next thing would be is to find your niche and just kind of stick to it. Many companies try to do too much and spread themselves thin. And so if you do one thing and you do it well, people will pay for it. And if you do many things mediocre, your churn rate will increase, and your results won't provide a good return on investment. The next thing I would say is to charge what you're worth. Don't think that, you know, businesses can't afford what you're doing. If you provide really good value, and your return on investment is very good, then you're going to be worth quite a bit of money. You know, you look at industry stats. You know, an average client worth for a dentist could be anywhere from $1,000 to $1,500. I mean, one dentist of ours, his average client worth is $1,434, I believe, is what he just told us. So, every client we send him is worth that amount. So, you know, you can kind of take that into consideration when you're charging what you do, as long as it's fair and people will pay it.
Actually,
Jake.
yeah, I was going to say an interesting story there about not really believing the business owners when they tell you they don't want to spend money, because they will if it brings them business, right? Any smart person would. We had a client that, well, previously was a prospect at the time, and never spent more than $300 for advertising a month. He was a small little guy. He was spending $40 a month on his website and thought that was too much. But come to find out, his website was complete duplicate of thousands of other websites. So he was completely de-indexed from, but he'd never gotten one lead from the internet. So we went in and quoted him a couple thousand a month, because that's what it was going to take. And we showed him exactly how he was going to get a positive ROI on that. Again, no, he's never spent more than $300 to $400 a month. And sure as heck, he went with it. And he's very, very happy, still a client. So again, don't be afraid to charge what you're worth.
Yeah, I think a great point that you made. Well, there's obviously a lot of them in that, but I think the one of the biggest ones is the niche approach. You know, you find certain people. Like I know an agency that does work with specifically with lawyers, and they do a great job because you're used to dealing with the lawyer. You know, if you're somebody who deals with say insurance agents all day, and then all of a sudden you take on a lawyer client who's a bulldog. You're gonna be like, whoa, like it's completely different. Yeah, so and I see that a lot of, you know, some people work with just with real estate agents and or, you know, insurance agents or dentists or things like that. So that's a great point. I think the, you know, and we talk about scaling and things like that, obviously, you know, tools come into play. And, I mean, everybody likes to talk about tools, right? I mean, who everybody wants to know what tools everybody uses. Funny thing is, the best ones are usually ones that are developed in-house, and they're never, you know, no one ever talks about them
Right.
publicly. So, what type of tools, you know, do you guys use to help scale your business and keep communication flowing and all that?
Yeah, I mean, we'll be open with the tools we use. The number one tool that we use is Basecamp. That, I mean, I can't say enough about Basecamp. And then we also use Raven Tools for reporting, which works really, really well. And then internally, we use Google Apps, Google Docs for internal communications. And then we also, actually, another one, we get every client to sign up for Dropbox. So we have them transport files to us, pictures through Dropbox, because their website has to have pictures of the proprietary pictures of their building, of their office, their products. And then, so we use Dropbox for that. And we also train our clients to use Jing, J-I-N-G, Jing, the screenshot program. And so we communicate with them through that. A couple other ones we just started using Proof, a software called Proof HQ for proofing. So that allows our designer to show us proofs and us comment on it really easily. We use FreshBooks for billing, and really very, very easy. And then we use Salesforce.com for all CRM. We use that to manage our email list. And then finally, for sales calls, it's important to kind of go out there with information. So if you're going out to see a vet, for example, you want to run his website through maybe Website Grader. We'll use Spy Foo. We'll use SEO Screaming Spider to run their website and find any 404 errors and kind of show them, hey, look, you have these errors holding you down. Customers are going to these pages with nothing on them. And then we'll use Google's keyword tool, OpenSite Explorer, to show them why they're not ranking, why maybe their competitors are ranking number one. So those are kind of the tools that we use in our day-to-day.
Awesome. So will you join me in the call for Basecamp to integrate Google Docs at some point in the next 10 years?
Yes, really. Which I just read an article that they're coming out with a complete revamped version very soon that hopefully will include that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. There's I know a lot of people who end up doing their own internal project management app. Usually a very large a group that does that, but you know, Basecamp is I think of all the pre-built solutions, the best of the bunch is just little things like the Google Docs integration, or the fact that you can't, like if I was your employee, you know, you go to the dashboard, you can't see all my to-dos the way you can see yours.
Yes.
So it's like just these little things that I hope they change with Basecamp Next, because if they do, they've got like 90%.
Seriously. You know. And it's great, this ProofHQ, the reason we chose that is because it does actually integrate in with Basecamp very well.
Awesome. I'll have to check that out. I think I was using Notable for a while, which is similar. Just a couple more questions here on the business development side of things, and then we'll let you get back to developing your business, as it were. When you meet with your local clients, what are they typically after? What do they ask? What are they, you know, what are they expecting? How do you manage all that?
Well, I would say that business owners really care about a few things in marketing. The biggest thing, and most notably, is getting their phone to ring. Mm-hmm. And really that will just lead to traffic through their door as long as they're answering their phone and they've got a decent system in place to get those clients engaged and whatnot, which will then lead to a positive return on investment. At the end of the day, it's all about the return on investment to them. So it all starts with the phone call or the email lead to their business. I mean, without that, nothing else really matters. So that's really gotta be your focus, because that's their focus. And I'd say that they kind of want you to be genuine and not just trying to push another product that again everybody else is. And one of the best ways to convey this is, you know, show them some live examples of real clients. You know, if you have them in your existing area that they can relate to, show them some positive testimonials of real live local businesses that are happy with your services. I mean, the kind of the burn and churn type companies out there, the ones that are notorious for people disliking with high churn rates, they're not going to have a lot of this, and they're certainly not going to have a good amount of clients in most cases that someone else can just pick up the phone and call and say, hey, you know, what are your experiences with this company, and, you know, should I do business with them? So those are all kind of really important, but, you know, the most important thing is getting their phone to ring, because that's really what they care about at the end of the day. And if you do that, then a lot of other things just kind of go away. I mean, they don't really care as much about all the other little nitty gritty things as long as the phone's ringing.
Right. So there's a couple of the big questions that we always get. Pricing. You know, we'll talk about this in a bit, but you know, people talk about the scaling of a local service firm and things like that, and some people think that it's not possible. I disagree a little bit on that one. I'm sure you guys do too. But when you get into pricing, how do you price things? Do you do flat fees, you know, per leads, a combination, or do you have a set structure for pretty much everything you do?
That's actually a great question. So we actually model our billing and our fees kind of off the Yellow Pages. And so as businesses are pulling out of the Yellow Pages, you know, we kind of want to be there to scoop up that money, because there's literally, you know, on a national scale, billions of dollars every year just leaving small business pocketbooks to go elsewhere. And so the way that the Yellow Pages work is that they deal in monthly contracts. And so that's exactly what we do. We'll schedule out typically anywhere from a 9 to 12 month contract. Yellow Pages have notoriously been a 12 month contract. And sometimes even more if they're integrating in like digital products, depending on the cycle of when the book would hit the streets to the end of the publication cycle. So there's a couple reasons we want a contract. Initially, we didn't want a contract, but we found that it's good because it gives us time. It forces a client to have to wait for SEO to take place. Okay. So, I mean, we all know that there's no overnight, like, you know, you start doing some off-page SEO work and, you know, next week you hit number one and your phone is just blowing up. So we need clients. We try to set the correct expectation, and we also try to get a good contract term. And then we know that, you know, we're somewhat safe with them and whatnot. But if they can make it through the time needed to let the SEO work take its place, and you know there's sufficient time, then that's not only going to allow them to see the return on investment, but they start to get comfortable spending that money. And then once the return hits, then the money's not even an issue, and so it really kind of works well. But you know, monthly contracts are absolutely where it's at. I mean, going out and trying to beat the streets every time you want to make a new sale, it just doesn't make sense. And I'll tell you, most of our clients, you know, they've started with a contract, and many, I mean, a high percentage of them now are out of contract, and they keep us on a month to month without issue. I mean, there's never even a question of it anymore.
Yeah. So I would say the paper lead is not, for us, hasn't been a good way to go, because you're only going to get attributed a certain amount of leads. They're only going to attribute a certain amount of leads that you brought them. But you're going to bring so much more business, whether it be word of mouth, whether it be just, you know, an article you may have put out, all these other things that really you did, but they're not going to attribute that to you. So that we haven't found that very, very good. The key is find out what their marketing budget is per month, and try to come in somewhere in there. And also, no big upfront fees. Most of these business owners, for us at least, we don't try to hit them. Their budgeting is not structured in a way that they can take a big hit. So let's say you're going to charge them $10,000 for a website or whatever. It's tough for them to swallow that. However, if you can get them into a 12-month contract or 9-month agreement, they're more apt to sign that.
Right, so sort of roll in, if you're doing if you're doing the website and things like that, roll that into your monthly cost over that 12-month period, rather than saying, oh, it's going to be $8,000 for this or $5,000 for this website plus another $2,000-$3,000, whatever it is, a month for everything else on top of that, right?
I would say that's absolutely correct. But you still, you know, if you can get away with doing the website separately and then just allocating funds to monthly SEO, that's great. But the one thing I wanted to point out is that there's no one size fits all. You can't cookie cutter internet marketing. And so, you know, we see many companies that say, okay, we're going to charge this amount for this product and it's just going to work for everyone. It's not that case with anybody. You walk in, you sit down with a client, and they're all after something different. They've all got different needs and wants. They all have different timelines. They all have a different budget amount that they're willing to spend. I mean, there's just so many things. You can look at somebody's citation profile and see that it's really clean versus somebody who's hired 3 or 4 knockoff SEO companies that just haven't, you know, just have really made a mess of things. And so that's all going to change as far as what you need to charge. And that kind of goes back to our initial statement of charging what you're worth. And just kind of hold them to your guns, and hopefully you can help the client make heads or tails of it so that it makes sense and that it works. But there's never a one-size-fits-all. So usually most of the time, you know, we're customizing our proposals to some degree.
Well, right. Yeah, exactly. And you know, quite frankly, sometimes you might want to, you know, you may sit down with a client who gives you a much better feeling than another one, and where you may be a little more app to say, yeah, we can maybe roll that in or whatever, and versus a client who you think may take up a little bit more of your time, and you want to be able to price for that
right
accordingly. Well,
and also think about ROI. So for example, the example I gave earlier where that client had not spent more than $300 a month and we came in at $2,000 a month, well, that's because we knew how much traffic we could get. We knew roughly the amount of leads we could get for him, and we knew that he was going to get an astronomical return on investment with that. So we didn't. It didn't matter to us how much he's used to spending. It mattered to us how much money he's going to make.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And it goes back to earlier. You were talking about the fact that sometimes local marketing isn't for everybody, and that's why I think it's important, like you said, not to take a cookie cutter approach, because you could specialize in local SEO, but there's nothing to say that you can't just do a web design for a local coffee shop or help them with their social media. They may not need, you know, a full-on SEO campaign. So it's, like you said, it's good to be open, because, you know, it opens up other areas, and then who knows who they know. They may own other businesses that might value. So you're right, the networking approach, the custom proposal approach, and having different services to offer, I think is, you know, without going too wide, right, is certainly...
Yeah, and that really kind of goes back to try to keep your niche service industries kind of intact. You know, we do get queried every now and again for the one-offs, and we try to refer those out if it's not in our main scope. The last thing we want to do is take someone on that's either going to pull our resources and time from somebody else that really needs it, or, you know, we're not going to be able to provide sufficient results for the money, which would then just kind of put a bad taste in someone's mouth, and just, you know, that never works out for anybody.
Right. Yeah. In terms of you know, keeping up with the local SEO stuff, I mean, things like you said, things change all the time. What are some of your key sources for keeping up with local SEO stuff?
Sure. So one of the main things is we try to stay really active in Google's forum, constantly try to be part of what's going on there. But I would say other areas that we're really involved with are Mike Blumenthal's blog. You know, I communicate with Mike every now and again for different things that I have questions on. Linda Buquette, she's got a great site. She deals specifically with dentists, and she usually has good insight to things that are coming up. You know, David Mim, of course, just kind of your industry standard. And then, you know, SEO book. It kind of gives us a top-down approach to a lot of things that are kind of going on. As far as, you know, more of a large scale, what's going on in the industry, algorithm changes, what people are seeing. So, and then at the end of the day, tracking your own results. You know, we try different things out. We try to document it and see what happens and see what works. Sometimes we'll just make changes to see what'll happen and what the outcome will be. And we've learned a lot as far as, you know, how to maybe manipulate Google Places to our advantage. And you know, some things have been really kind of neat that we've come across. So the thing is that there's very little out there on local SEO from those who are actually doing it. You know, the ones that really share the information are, you know, really important to us, but most don't share their secrets. I mean, even those guys probably don't share a lot of their secrets. So kind of one of those things, you know. There's not a lot out there, so you kind of got to pave your own path. But you know, in the coming months, we hope to put out some information, including a book that we will use to try to share some secrets that we have and maybe kind of give back to the community that's helped us out so much.
Awesome.
I was gonna. I've got my RSS feed open. I'll just read through you what we check every day. Blumenthal, Greg Sterling, Small Business SEM by Matt McGee, David Mim, Optilocal is really good. Catalyst Marketing, Andrew Schottland, the Kelsey BIA Kelsey Local is really, really good. They started in the Yellow Pages industry, and they do a lot of reporting on the small business world. Then the Google Places Help Forum. And then finally, GrowMap, a blog called GrowMap, does some really good stuff.
Great. Go with the link to all that stuff in the post here. And just one final question. You know, there's talk sometimes of you know, the fact that a local, and we talked about it a little bit, some of the key components, and I think there was a post recently out there that sort of shot down the whole local client type setup where people, you know, they want, you know, $50,000 a month services, but they're only paying, you know, $1,000 a month. I find that this is the case for some clients, but I think it's if you guys maybe can just briefly talk about the evolution of your business. It seems like you would start as, you know, you get in the business, maybe you take on a couple clients at a lower rate than you would like, and you sort of prove yourself, and then from there you grow into different, you know, other services that you can provide, and then, you know, at that point, you just keep expanding within your niche, you know, to find other businesses both locally and across the country. But I think it's more of, it's not so much that it's a unscalable business model. I think it's just people try to go into it thinking that every client you sit down with is going to hand you over a pile of cash without any qualifications.
Right.
Right.
Which would be ideal, right?
Which,
That's what
yeah, which is probably what some people, you know, if they, might be, you know, used to, at least back when nobody knew what SEO was. It was just like, you know, I'll point, you know, 20 spammy links at your site and you'll be number one and whatever. And yeah, give me, you know. So I think it's and especially with the local businesses, I mean, in this economy, they're the ones that usually are hit, you know, harder. We have a number of local businesses here that have been hit by, you know, the movement in of larger retail stores, you know, a local hardware store, you know, a local insurance agent who's now is competing against a local State Farm and local Geico office, you know, stuff like that. But if you guys could just maybe, you know, debunk that theory a little bit, in terms of it being an unscalable business model.
I would say initially that as long as you can prove your value, you know, you can really charge what you're worth. You know, when we started out, we just try to show our clients what we knew, what we were capable with, and found some that we actually knew, and just kind of went from there. Once we had kind of a foundation of some proven results, and there's two elements. You got to kind of prove to the client that you can do it, but you kind of got to prove to yourself too. So once we did that, we knew that we were on the right track. Then it was a lot easier to go after other clients to say, hey, here's a real life example of what we've done with one person or another person, and here's our plan as to what we could do with your company, and here's what sets us apart, and here's a testimonial from your customer in your industry, and so on. So there's just a bunch to that.
I would say I would add to that. I mean, there are companies out there trying to scale this out, right? Like Reach Local and Yodel and those type of things. And we've both had vast experience working closely with these types of companies. And I would say it's a spectrum, right? I mean, you can have high scalability, high automation, but you're also going to have very low retention rate. And then you can have very, very low automation, very, very manual, and then have a higher retention rate. So I would say it's scalable, but I think it's scalable in the way that an agency is scalable. We look at it as kind of like pods. So, a pod of employees, let's say a project manager, a couple citation builders, maybe a designer, can handle X amount of clients and X amount of revenue. And then once you get that pod, then you just duplicate that pod, right? And then kind of scale out. Very, very similar to what an agency would be. And then at that, the best thing about that is you're keeping your retention rate very, very high.
Right, it goes back to talking about, the systems that you were talking about earlier, having a system in place, and you don't necessarily have to have the upfront cookie cutter approach in terms of, pricing, but on the back end, you really ought to have a scalable system that works
Right.
as flawlessly as it can
Right.
with human involvement. So, all right, great. Well, I think we covered a lot of stuff here. I just want to wrap it up here. These guys are from FireGang.com. Like I said, very active members of the and respected members of the SEO book community. As you can tell by a lot of the information here, definitely on the expert level of local SEO stuff. And I know on your site now you have a downloadable guide to how to increase map rankings, and that's free. And then you also mentioned that you're coming out with a book in a couple of months that covers pretty much the whole local SEO spectrum.
Exactly.
All right, great. Well, sir, let us know when that comes out. We'll highlight that here on the blog so everyone can get a copy of that. And I just want to take a brief moment and thank you guys for hopping on here. It's about an hour-long call, so I hope everybody has their iPods ready or whatever you use to
Two
listen to
times
this.
speed, right?
Yeah. All
That's
right, guys. Well, thank you very much for your time.
appreciate it.
See ya.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks,
Take
Eric.
care. Yep.
Bye.